would take it. That's what was going on. Ernie Scheider is one of the people that we count on for information about all of this. He's a journalist with Reuters, and I talked him into coming back on. Ernie, good to have you on News and Views.
Good to be back, Joel.
Talk to me about this. When you're paying somebody to take your product, it's not a good day.
Definitely not. This was the first time in history that we had negative WTI oil. That's the main U.S. contract for oil. At one point, got down to about negative $40. The reasons for that are sort of technical in nature, but basically oil trades on a monthly contract, and the contract expires today. So yesterday, a lot of traders found themselves basically looking for places to put oil. Normally, that is a very routine task. You basically flip the contract over to the next month. But because of coronavirus, because of the oil price war that happened between Saudi Arabia and Russia, there's so much oil on the market, there's just no place to put it. So as a consequence, the value of that oil plummeted, and that's why it went negative for the first time ever.
So what do you do then? Where do you store it? If you own it, say I own a barrel of oil and I know of no place where I can put it, what do I do with it?
Well, you've got to figure out something to do with it, and so that becomes your problem. And so think of it as a game of hot potato, and this is a sort of a very basic analogy, but you don't want to be caught holding the potato. But if you are caught holding the potato, you got to do something with it. So that's why a lot of traders are reticent to make deals, because when you make a deal, and especially when it involves physical product, you have to do something with that. So that's why the value dropped so much. I will say that we are about to go into a new month contract, and as of today, let me check real quick here, oil is back in the positive territory. It's $1.94, better, but obviously much lower than it was even just a week ago.
Yeah, and everybody expected and kind of knew that. But to me, what happened yesterday is just a glaring example of what's going on in the industry as a whole. And so you know that, okay, the state I live in, the state budget was built around oil being $45 a barrel. What's going to happen with my state budget? Are we going to see $45 for a barrel of oil anytime soon?
You know, it doesn't seem that way. And many sort of industry leaders and thinkers are warning that we should be prepared for what happened in the 1980s. Lord Brown, who was the CEO of BP, British Petroleum, for about 12 years, went out this morning in London, and he gave an interview where he basically said as much. He warned folks that, look, the oil glut of the 80s may be back. We shouldn't expect higher oil prices for the foreseeable future. I mean, we've got, thanks to a lot of technological innovations, obviously the U.S. shale industry. At the same time, we've got Russia, Saudi Arabia, other OPEC members and OPEC allies that have state-run oil companies or state-influenced oil companies that really need higher oil prices or need just to keep pumping, just to keep their national budgets going. So you've got sort of an inherent tension there between those two parties, and that's going to keep a lot of oil on the global market for the foreseeable future. And at the same time, we've got this coronavirus pandemic that really, really is hurting demand. You know, your previous caller was talking about folks, you know, not able to go to work right now. If you're not going to work, you're not driving, you're not flying to see grandma for Thanksgiving. So it just becomes a domino effect from there.
So the shale industry always had two strikes against it versus other individuals that were pumping oil. What does this mean? Is this even harder for us here in the Williston Basin?
Yes, unfortunately. While the Williston Basin is certainly a prolific shale spot, it's rural, it's remote. So you've got that added cost to transport the oil to market on top of that. There's also not a large refining base in the Williston Basin, so you have to, if there were more refineries there, you could process more of the crude there that to be used locally. You've got that strike against it, so that definitely does hurt the basin longer term.
So the president's tweeting out that he will not let our oil and gas industry fail. What tools does he have in the toolbox to back up that statement?
Yeah, that tweet from Trump came out about 20 or 30 minutes ago, and he was very, very strongly worded about how he's not going to, as you say, let the industry fail. And he's directed the U.S. Secretary of Energy and the Secretary of the Treasury to, in his words, formulate a plan which will make funds available so that these very important companies and jobs will be secured. It's unclear how that could take shape right now. The Secretary of Energy does oversee the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which is basically just, you know, for lack of a better analogy, a giant tank that, in a salt formation where they store oil. He could order the Secretary of Energy to buy more oil, which he has done in the past, therefore giving U.S. companies a place to put their product. He could order the Secretary of Treasury to look at some sort of direct investment in shale companies. This is just a guess on my part. So I think the devil will certainly be in the details. The tweet could also be designed to prod members of Congress to include oil companies in any future stimulus that may be coming up here related to coronavirus. It is an election year, obviously, and the states that produce oil and gas primarily have tended to vote for Republicans in the past and certainly voted for Trump in the 2016 election. So, you know, this tweet this morning certainly seems also designed by Trump to send a signal to those constituencies.
Except he has them already, which leaves me scratching my head because, you know, we can talk about building up the strategic reserve and storing it and all of those type of things. We can talk about the art of the deal. I mean, he bought the last time, I think, and you can correct me, Ernie, on this, but the last time I think he bought to try to prop up the oil industry, built up those reserves even further. Didn't he buy it like 30 something a barrel? I mean, if he's buying on behalf of the American people and he wants to build up the reserves, if he buys right now, he's not paying anything for it.
True. And so, I mean, if you're a shale CEO, you know, at the end of the day, you want to move product or keep your doors open. So that could be part of the strategy there, is to say, hey, you know, if we buy, at least these folks have an outlet. And so they're not actually, you know, the flip side of that, like we saw yesterday with the contract, these companies aren't having to actually pay people to take their product. So that could be part of the logic there. It's just a guess on my part with what the Secretary of Energy could do, but that is one option that they could have.
Ernie Scheider is our guest. He writes for Reuters. He understands the oil industry better than anybody I've ever met. Ernie, when you look at this from the perspective of the consumer themselves, the ones that are driving, I haven't seen too many complaining about pulling into a gas station and paying $1.40 for gas.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, gasoline is going to be very, very cheap. This will help the airlines. Of course, the airlines are facing a lot of other structural challenges right now. So it will start to have benefits elsewhere. You know, I mean, the last time obviously oil has never gone negative, but the last time sort of gasoline prices were really, really this low is probably around the George W. Bush administration. Folks love, obviously, to pay less at the pump, but of course, because of the shale revolution now, much more of the U.S. economy is linked to oil. Remember, before all this started, the U.S. was the world's largest oil producer. That wasn't the case when George W. Bush was president. So while we might love having cheaper gasoline to put in our tanks, I think the knock-on effects for the rest of the U.S. economy are going to be much bigger than they would have been 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, you can see some of that. When it's this double-edged sword where, yes, if you just simply look at it from the politics standpoint, I know he has a number of large donors that have affected his campaign and others. We have that here, that oil plays a huge part in it. But then you've got the flip side, which is at a tough time in farming, you know, they're buying cheaper fuel. At a tough time in aeronautics, they're buying cheaper fuel. So you might win over here and make somebody happy, but I don't know if you're making them happy on the flip side, Ernie.
Yeah, that's the tension right there, and that's sort of the needle that Trump is trying to thread. When coronavirus first started about, you know, 2-3 months ago, when it first started to really get big, I believe one of Trump's initial tweets was, you know, enjoy the lower gasoline prices. And that was sort of his way of saying, hey, you know, to the American populace, you're paying less to drive. Obviously, the situation has mushroomed and gotten much worse in the interim. And now no one really is driving, and a lot of oil producers are facing a whole heap of pain.
Yeah. So what is your prediction? What's going to happen over the next 2-3 weeks?
Well, you know, we do know that the U.S. Congress is debating another round of stimulus involving some small businesses. Certainly some oil producers could fall into that category, and we'll see if they'll push Congress to include more funding there for them. It will be interesting to see what the Secretary of Energy and the Secretary of Treasury do in response to Trump's directive. We do know in the past that Trump has found creative ways to take funds that Congress appropriated for one thing and using it for something else, the border wall being a great example. So how Trump sort of moves money around I think creative ways is the right phrase. We'll see there. I think there's going to be a lot of focus on what Saudi Arabia does in reaction to this. Already we know overnight that folks in Riyadh were closely monitoring this and taking moves, some saying that they should stop all production entirely, some saying they should cut it much more that they had agreed to, some saying they should move up planned cuts to now. So it would be interesting to see what comes out of there. Unfortunately, you know, we do expect probably that there'll be more pain here in the U.S. shale patch. You know, we have Whiting that has filed for bankruptcy. You and I have talked about that, Joel, but there have been other companies that have sort of flirted with that line. So will we see more? To be determined.
Ernie, where do they find your work?
Reuters.com.
It's that easy. Ernie Scheider, ladies and gentlemen, thanks. Thanks for coming on when we call, Ernie. We're going to end up calling again. I appreciate it.
Sounds good. Talk soon. Yeah. Sounds good. Talk soon.